Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. Happy May, everybody. I'm Tass Mellis. With me, as always, the man in the middle, it's Trey Kirby.
Heyo!
Heyo!
All right, JD chiming in over there, making the magic happen. It is JD.
Hello.
What's up, JD?
What's up?
No skeets for the rest of the week. Mm-hmm. Just Trey, who is in the middle, who just mentioned to me that he had a great night with Skeets playing basketball. So we have to mention that.
Yeah, biggest games of the night. Me and Skeets looking like Jokic and Murray out there playing in the church gym. Uh-huh. Got down a bunch of times, Tass, but we were always coming back.
Always.
Yeah, it was nice.
Thank you. Thank you for that. What was also nice were the games last night. We'll get to those, of course. We'll get to LeBron's future with the Lakers. We'll get to the Pelicans' future this offseason. Some words were had about that. Kristaps Porzingis injury update. But we got to start with the game that isn't Trey Kirby. It is the Knicks and the Sixers. How did this end the way it did, Trey? I don't get it. Knicks up 6, 28 seconds left. Sixers are ready to be sent home for the entire summer, and somehow they came back. Tyrese Maxey obviously leads the way, but how, why, what's to talk about in this game, Trey, other than that ending, man?
I mean, I guess we start the last 25 seconds.
Yeah.
Is this going to be called 7 points in 25 seconds for Tyrese Maxey? I mean, I guess it's like technically 7 points in 18 seconds.
Right.
Doesn't roll off the tongue the way 8 points, 9 seconds does for Reggie Miller, but it was definitely Reggie Miller-esque. This is how you get a tiny statue built in Philadelphia. Performances like this from Tyrese Maxey, literally saving the season. After Deuce McBride hit the jumper at the free throw line, I thought it was over. We went to go play another pickup game. I saw text messages coming in. Good night, Philly, says my dad. RIP the process, says our buddy Jared. It seemed like it was over.
Yep.
But then Mitchell Robinson lunged a little too far on Tyrese Maxey's pump fake. Maxey knocks it down, goes to the free throw line, hits the jumper there. We play the foul game. Josh Hart leaves one way short. The next one he makes, but was not an inspiring make on that one. Sixers get the ball up, and Maxey, smart move by him, pulls from, what, 35 feet? Shot it with about 9 seconds left, so the Knicks didn't really have an opportunity to foul up three, send him to the line, and they get the ball back. Great shot. And then the Knicks smartly just rush it back down the floor in the midst of all the chaos, and Nick Batum makes a great block on Jalen Brunson. This was a wild end to this game. Fun to watch back. I guess if you're looking for reasons it happened, the foul game, really. Mitch Robinson stepping out a little too far after the game. He's like, yeah, I messed up. I got to live with it. And then Josh Hart missing a free throw. Those 2 points right there were the 2 points that mattered the most.
I watched that Mitchell Robinson foul back a million times because it just felt like something that the NBA has been going away from
yes.
this past season, which is players can't just projectile themselves as if they're shooting the ball, but it's not really their shot form at all. They're literally going horizontal, and that's what Tyrese Maxey kind of did. He kind of moved his foot, and he kind of jumped that way, and Mitchell Robinson had jumped, but he was just in his position. He had landed, and Tyrese Maxey decided to propel himself. Should have been a foul. Am I just one of those people right now, just needs to watch it over and over again? I think that's fine to call that one a foul, because Tyrese Maxey was, yes, he threw his body out a little bit, but it wasn't that bad. It wasn't that extreme. And what was extreme was him hitting a three-point shot, yes, as he hit Mitchell Robinson's arm, or chest, I should say, to make it, yeah, a two-point game. Then Josh Hart, unfortunately, a guy who played every single second in this game. He played all 48 and then into overtime after Maxey tied it, and he misses that free throw. And then, as you said, that three ball, it was on the Knicks friggin' logo at midcourt. So that's the cool part. I know people are calling this the Tyrese Maxey game, and I wonder if we're just sort of, you know, we're in the moment right now. Will we remember it as the Tyrese Maxey game? I think we'll remember it, that shot. What if the Knicks lose? I mean, what if the Sixers? No, what if Sixers lose the series? Are we going to remember the Tyrese Maxey game? That's what I'm saying. I guess. I'm fine with that.
You still remember the Reggie Miller game, right?
Well, that was
ridiculous. They lost that series. The Pacers lost that series.
Yeah, that was okay. All right, 7-25. Sure, I guess that's what we'll remember it as.
The guy had 44 points.
Yeah.
Or 46. Sorry, he scored 17 in the fourth quarter. He could not miss. He completely brought him back. Are we going to remember this? It's going to go down in history.
Go down in history? I don't know. Like last year, James Harden scored 40-plus against the Boston Celtics. He won that game. Are we going to remember that? We remember that because the Sixers were up 3-2 and they lost that series. Remember that series. Remember, like, Donovan Mitchell against Jamal Murray in the bubble. But do you remember all those? It was a great series.
You do?
Yeah, I do. I do. I
mean, you're listing them. We're going to remember this, man. This was a legendary performance.
The Tyrese Maxey game. I mean, if they get eliminated in the first round. Anyways, whatever. It was a great performance.
That was awesome.
So I think Josh Hart was probably tired, as I mentioned those. He had to guard Tyrese Maxey the entire freaking game, a lot of the game. And so Maxey was just great at going up and down. And it was an unfortunate overtime, I thought, for the New York Knicks, who were just going to Jalen Brunson over and over and over again. Basically, no one else was touching the ball.
Yep.
It was him and Hartenstein who came in and replaced Mitchell Robinson after a couple minutes. And it really was a great performance, like you said, Batum with the block in the fourth quarter, and then in overtime, just to be there beside Jalen Brunson, take away that left hand. Jalen Brunson went up for the shot with 20 seconds left, but he saw Batum's hand, so he tried to pass to Isaiah Hartenstein, and that ball went out of bounds.
Yep.
Great stuff there, obviously, from the Philadelphia 76ers. A game I will always remember. the Tyrese Maxey game, which was, 46, 9 assists, 5 boards, and the shooting from 3. He was speedy. But to see him hit 7 threes like that, it is a very memorable game. Now he's got to do it 2 more times.
He was perfect next to Embiid, who had a terrible game. If it wasn't for Tyrese Maxey, we would be leading with Joel Embiid having 9 turnovers in an elimination game right here. But they still kept going to Embiid. The Knicks were double-teaming, and wisely, Nick Nurse had Tyrese Maxey 1 pass away from Joel Embiid. So an easy pass to Maxey. He's able to knock down the catch and shoot jumpers, or maybe hit him with a back cut. Embiid did throw some decent passes alongside his 9 turnovers. And man, what a weird game for Embiid. 19 points, 16 rebounds, 10 assists. I think that was his first playoff triple-double of his career, but he did not have a good game at all, except for making like 3 humongous defensive plays down the stretch. In this one, I thought Tobias Harris had a really nice game, 19 points for him. He was the only guy who was scoring early on for Philadelphia while Embiid was just falling down out there, couldn't figure out what was going on. And then Kelly Oubre made a bunch of plays down the stretch. None of them looked good. I didn't. He had a basket before the Deuce McBride jumper in regulation where like he catches the ball underneath the hoop, almost falls over, and somehow still scores. Almost did the same thing in overtime. Batum throws a wicked lob pass to him. Oubre's wide open, tries to catch it one hand, almost drops it, still somehow finishes on the other side. You gotta play almost perfectly to pull off a comeback like the Sixers did, like the Knicks did in game 2. I don't necessarily think the Sixers played perfectly, but they got perfect contributions from the guys in the nick of time.
You're in the nick of time.
Hey, that wasn't even on purpose.
Speaking of Knicks, Nick Nurse, with that beautiful design for that Kelly Oubre lay-in that didn't look like it was going to be a lay-in because he caught it from Nikola Batum, another Nick. That was a beautiful play. but it sure felt like Kelly Oubre was going to fall on his face in overtime, but he managed to do that. Just the picks up top to release Kelly Oubre down low. Because the Knicks were definitely looking at Embiid and Maxi up top. What are we going to do here? And as you said, Embiid, not a great game, period. But at the end of it, to come up with a big block on Isaiah Hartenstein with 2 minutes left, that was a monstrous play. It kind of felt to me like watching Lakers with Anthony Davis, who's had a great series, but he can't be relied upon with everything that he has to do for the first three quarters as the guy to go score in the fourth quarter. Like, that is just a lot to ask for a big man, especially what Embiid is going through. Apparently had to deal with migraines, and that's why he didn't go to shoot around earlier on in the day, and you could see how gassed he was.
Yeah.
9 turnovers in this game, missing 12 of his 19 shots. I thought Mitchell Robinson coming back from not playing game 4 was big against Embiid. Just watching, he blocked Embiid, which turned into a great fast break 3 for Miles McBride. He drew an offensive foul on Embiid, took another elbow to the face from Embiid. It wasn't called a foul. Lots of bodies being thrown around. He stripped Embiid with 4 minutes left, and then he poked from Embiid with 1:45 left. That turned into an OG dunk on the break. We needed more OG in overtime if you're the New York Knicks. I didn't really get that. They decided to go to Miles McBride instead of Dante DiVincenzo, who's sometimes struggling, and OG was just hanging out there, who's clearly materialized into like the second best New York Knick offensively in this series. He has been really, really good the last couple of games. So that was kind of odd seeing Tibbs do that. He just went too deep on the bench because they've lost Bojan Bogdanović to surgery, so he is done. They just went to Miles McBride and Mitchell Robinson. And the guys were playing heavy minutes. Heavy minutes.
Yeah, we got, 50 minutes for Jalen Brunson, almost 51. 53, that's a whole game for Josh Hart. 50 minutes for OG Anunoby. 49 for Tobias Harris. 48 almost for Embiid. He was going to go the entire second half, but then it was just so brutal. At the beginning of the fourth quarter, Nick Nurse is like, you got to sit down for at least a couple of minutes so you can give us something. 52 for Tyrese Maxey. Incredible stuff. This is what playoff basketball is all about.
Yes, and that's what this series has been all about. This series has been classic Knicks stuff. It feels like old Knicks stuff where it comes down to the last 30 seconds, last minute, just low-scoring games, teams fighting. It has been extremely fun. For most of the fans in the arena, it was fun. I saw New York Knicks fans covering their ears in this one because it was so loud. Like, it was too loud for some fans. They had to put on their headphones, as in, oh, I can't hear. Kind of strange, I thought, in this one. And game 6, apparently, like Barkley said, and Embiid has said, we don't want Knicks fans in our arena for game 6, which should be an absolute blast on Thursday night, 9 Eastern. They go late.
Late game.
Yeah. Very strange, I guess, because they want that to be the bigger game, because the other game is Bucks-Pacers.
That's like a 6:30 tip-off, I think.
6:30 tip-off, 5:30 local, if you're into it, in Indiana. Yeah, that is weird. They play a 4:30 local last week. Weird stuff for
you
them.
You think Sixers fans are going to be selling their tickets? Like they did for game 4, you had Joel Embiid coming out post-game saying, I'm not calling out our fans, but our fans shouldn't sell their tickets to Knicks fans. Pretty much. You can make a lot of money doing it, but also this is going to be an awesome game.
Yeah. No, they should not. I can't believe that they would sell them to Knicks fans. I thought they were...
Well, you don't know who you're selling it to. You just put it on StubHub. You're like, man, I can get $1,000 for this?
Yeah. Well, you got to check. There's no way to check.
I don't know if there is.
I thought, they were just Knicks fans who would purchase them some way, somehow. Because it is pretty close to make it on over. Any other notes before we move on?
No, I'm noted up. Noted up, dog. I think Nick Nurse broke his hand, though, didn't he? I think they said Nick Nurse like broke his hand getting angry about some kind of missed call. I forget which one it was. And he wasn't able to draw plays on the whiteboard because his hand was messed up.
What?
Yeah.
No, I didn't see that.
So I guess that's why Maxey just had to take it upon himself. He's like, we got no plays to run. I'll just shoot threes.
Sorry, man. Yep. That was amazing. An amazing ending there for Tyrese Maxey and the Philadelphia 76ers. Yeah, game 6, a Thursday night. Another game 6 because the Bucks are alive. Will be Bucks-Pacers because the Bucks were down 3-1 going to this game 5. No Damian Lillard, no Giannis Antetokounmpo, No problem. They've got themselves a series. If they want to get back, will they come back? We shall see. Chris Middleton, 29. Bobby Portis, 29. It's now 3-2 Indiana. What'd you make of this game?
I thought this was just championship pedigree from the Milwaukee Bucks. The way they came out and said, we're not going out this easily. They were really in game four. They just ran out of steam, ran out of players with Bobby Portis getting ejected earlier in that one. But they gave the necessary effort to stay in game four with the Pacers. They came out and did the exact same thing, mm-hmm. I thought, in game five. It started on the first play. They post up Brooke Lopez on Miles Turner. He gives a quick little jab step, dunks on Miles Turner. First play of the game, Brooke Lopez out of the post. You're like, okay, these guys are fired up. And it continued like that, I thought. The Bucks did a great job of controlling the pace. Lopez got a ton of post touches. Bobby Portis, he owed Milwaukee one. And he came through in this one, 29 points. Made a bunch of momentum plays. He was posting up a lot. Middleton is deliberate when he has the ball, ISOing, takes his time. Even Danilo Gallinari was getting post touches in this one. They were playing it slow. This was a Bucks game rather than a up and down Pacers sort of match. They only scored 92 points. Indiana did. That's not going to cut it for them. But I thought that was great stuff from the Bucks. Patrick Beverley was awesome in this game, especially in the second quarter. Scored 12 of his 13 points. Also had 12 assists and shut down Tyrese Halliburton after the first quarter. Malik Beasley hit 4 threes. He's dancing back and forth like me getting out of the shower. That's got to be insulting if you're a Pacers fan. The Bucks back. Yeah, you're thinking about what I'm doing after the shower.
Yeah, I'm thinking of you naked, that's for sure.
Better than doing Patrick Beverley's too small bow after you hop out of the shower, I suppose. But the Bucks backcourt outscored the Pacers backcourt, 31-28. And who are we listening to on the broadcast? Greg Anthony, I believe. He called it exactly right. If the Bucks, with their backup backcourt, is able to outscore the Pacers backcourt or even play them even, that's a win for Milwaukee because they obviously got great contributions from their front court as well. Portis was awesome. Lopez was great. And Middleton, this guy is Michael Jordan. It's official. That's what I heard a Buck heckler say over the TNT broadcast.
The Bucks did look like the far better defensive team in this game. They look like a different team. And there seems to be a lot of reasons for that. They seem to be switching everything, and that helped, I think, in the transition defense game where they just knew that they didn't have to look for their guy. They just picked up the guy they were with. We're switching everything to hold Indiana to 92 points, their fewest in the series, their fewest this season, is impressive. Indiana started 31-21. They're leading 7 of 12 from 3 early on, but then the Bucks hit that run. As you said, Patrick Beverley, it was that second quarter 18-2 run where they held the Pacers down 17 points in the second quarter, 19 points in the third quarter. Is kind of surprising to see the Bucks be able to play that kind of defense, to see Patrick Beverley, who got a tech last game for saying too small in this one, do a professional bow. Like he did a bow into a, oh, that guy's too small. No tech. That was just performance, I guess. Yeah. They allowed that. Bobby Portis, who was kicked out the previous game, he did say, I screwed up, so I needed to do something for my team here. Who also did it too small in this one.
Yep.
No tech. I don't know what the protocol is now, but whatever. I guess you can.
Anything goes in game five, I guess.
Yeah, you can't take one of those guys out of the game when they literally could be going home in that game. So I guess that's the thing. But they played extremely hard, as you said there. The dunk on Miles Turner. Chris Middleton was guarding Miles Turner at some points. Brooke Lopez guarding Aaron Nesmith at some point, because they were just really good at guarding the three-point line, because that's where the Pacers kicked the Bucks' ass. They were only one of six on corner threes in this one. That changed because they were willing to give it all up. And even Danilo Gallinari was coming off the bench. They went older off the bench. Yeah. A Doc move. Doc loves doing that. So do we see, you know, the old guys come in and perform in game six in Indiana where they haven't won a game?
True. You know,
They've only won two home games in this series. What do you think of this series going forward?
It's easier to win at home, for sure. It's your elimination game. You don't want to lose it on your home court.
Yeah.
These are some proud guys. A lot of them do have titles, so not a surprise that the Bucks would play really well at home in Game 5. Can they do it in Game 6? We'll see, because I think you're right. You got to tip your hat to Doc Rivers. He had a great defensive game plan for Game 5. You mentioned the weird matchups they had and how they would switch, but then they were fighting so hard to send guys out of the post if there was a mismatch, or if the Pacers were able to get it in to Siakam or Turner. quick double teams to make it hard for them. 7 threes in the first quarter for the Bucks, for the Pacers. They ended up with 12 for the game, completely shut down in that area after that first quarter. So it's going to be on Rick Carlisle to find out a way for them to generate the three-point attempts, to figure out a way to get the Pacers in transition, because the Bucks, they've got some know-how, at the very least. They've got some defensive players out there in Lopez and Beverly who are incredible in this game defending their position. So I think it'll still be tight in Game 6. But, I mean, having it a home game is big time for the Pacers. They got to find a way to get Siakam going because he was pretty invisible in this game.
Yeah, he's slowed down since those amazing first two games. He has slowed down in the last three games, and in this one in particular, he didn't look right. So the last three games, he's, you know, from those 36 and 37 that he started this series with, he's gone 17, 13, 12 in games 3, 4, and 5. Just got to find him. And that, even if the Bucks are covering him extremely well and switch onto him, that's a good move for the Indiana Pacers, because he's a good score, no matter what, no matter who is guarding him, no matter if Danilo Gallinari is playing his ass off or whatever's happening. But yeah, the Bucks needed to win this game, obviously, to keep their season alive. So Doc did some things. He went away from a couple of their young guys a little bit on the bench, Andre Jackson and AJ Green, basically at 12 minutes combined. So less of them, more Danilo Gallinari, who was scrapping. I know he didn't have a big game, but he
scored. Yeah, he rebounded.
Yeah, and he was flailing all around. So if Doc can come back from a 3-1 deficit instead of always losing. Now, I don't know. Because we all thought Rick Carlisle, he's got the coach's advantage to some degree, but Doc has looked good here.
He did good.
And after the game, he was asked, Giannis, Doc, is he coming back? What about Dame? Are they coming back? He took a long time to answer. He said, I don't know how to answer that. Pause. I know, I hope. I think they're very, very, very close.
Three varies.
Yep. That is accurate. Exactly three varies. And I listened to a podcast today, a Locked On Bucks podcast, to see what they're thinking, to see what they're talking about. And there is somebody, Justin Garcia, who's on the podcast, who literally got a text while the podcast was going from somebody within the realm of the team that said, you know how nobody could go to that walkthrough today, and it was an extended walkthrough. Giannis was in there, okay. and the media was not allowed in there, and there's a good chance that he comes back for Game 6. Now, that's just a text from somebody who hosts a podcast called Lock on Bucks. I don't know if it's real or not, but it is 3 weeks since Giannis got hurt.
Yeah.
So it has been a bit, and maybe they were just, you know, allowing their guys like Beverly and Portis, their vets, to go and give the last effort before bringing him back for another game. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
I almost kind of feel like Giannis is closer to coming back because Lillard just suffered his injury in Game 4, messing up his Achilles, whereas, like you're saying, Giannis has been out 3 weeks. We see the news with him and Porzingis. You're like, 3 weeks is a time when you could maybe come back from a calf strain. So that would be very interesting to see. But I had completely forgotten or hadn't really thought about the idea of Doc Rivers coming back from a 3-1 deficit.
Yeah.
The most Doc way this could go would be forcing a Game 7 and losing at home. No offense to Bucks fans, but that would be great for the quote graphic industry out there, because I'm sure Doc would say something wild.
All right, moving on to the...
Well, hold on, I got one more note on that.
Okay.
What'd you think of that TNT heckler? There was a guy sitting right behind the TNT broadcast, so you could hear every word he was saying, and he was actually pretty funny. I think it would be great if you were a Bucks fan watching this game and listening to this guy. Like I said, he did the Chris Middleton as Michael Jordan. It's official. Andrew Nembhard is 5'1". TJ McConnell is 4'3". The best moment, I thought, Pascal Siakam gets fouled. This guy screams, he's going to miss him anyway. Siakam misses both free throws, and then he ended it with, how about that crowd in Milwaukee, Tyrese? That crowd is me. Big shout out to Alexandros Susiopoulos.
He's a Greek.
He appears to be a Greek. His handle is Greek Freak 498. They got to get that guy to Indiana somehow. He was incredible, man. It was like listening to NBA Twitter during a game.
Yeah, that does sound very accurate.
That was hilarious.
That was good. And yeah, Patrick Beverly took it to 4'3", TJ McConnell. Is that what he said? And Chris Middleton, Yeah, he's not Jordan. But it is surprising how good Chris Middleton has been the last three games. He had 29 last night, 25 the night before, and 42 the game before. He's turned it on.
He's had a good series.
He has had a good series. So game six, Thursday night.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City, with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful, designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
Now, moving on to the Magic and the Cavaliers, because the home teams keep winning. They've won all five games in this series. The Cavs win to take it a 3-2 series lead. No Jared Allen in this game, who's out with a rib contusion. It's 3-2. What'd you make of this one?
They said it couldn't be done, Tass. Both teams scored over 100 points in this game. Can you believe it? 104-103. That's like a 150-148 game for these two teams. You mentioned no Jared Allen. Sometimes it takes an injury to figure out the best version of your team. That's what happened with the Miami Heat way back when. Chris Bosh got hurt.
Yeah.
They had to bring in Shane Battier alongside whoever their big was at the time. And then they're like, wait a second, we should be playing four out all the time here. Same thing happened with the Warriors. David Lee got hurt. We'll go with Draymond Green. Guess what? He became a Hall of Famer because that team worked. There was a lot more space out there for the Cleveland Cavaliers in this game. So you saw the best game that Darius Garland has had in this series. 23 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. He did most of his scoring in the first quarter, scored 17 points, but he was thriving with all the extra space on there, driving and cutting. He made a really big play to dish to Evan Mobley late in this game, a wraparound for a dunk that was nearly the dagger. Donovan Mitchell, I thought, also had a really good game. He's been good in first halves in this series, and then I think maybe the knee problems catch up to him the longer and longer he goes in, but still 28 points for him. So Mitchell and Garland combined for 51 last night. Did the math. Mitchell and Garland combined for 50 points in two games in Orlando. Big time change for the Cavaliers in this one, with Isaac Okoro stepping into the starting lineup for Jared Allen. He's not a good shooter. He went 2-for-10 in this one. I think, 2-for-6 maybe from the three-point line, but at least he stands out there.
Yeah.
Right? You got to be one step closer to him. So there's a few less people in the lane when you're attacking. I thought that made all the difference for the Cleveland Cavaliers. You also saw George Niang didn't get in this game because he hasn't been shooting well. Kind of slow out there. Max Strus, Morris, huge boosts in the second half. They closed this game with Marcus Morris.
Yeah.
We're talking Marcus Morris here, not Markeith. We're talking Marcus Morris.
I had to think about
it. They both made huge plays. And then Evan Mobley was great. Paolo Banchero was awesome in this game.
He was.
Except for down the stretch, because Evan Mobley took him out of the game, playing defense, and then he had the big-time block on Franz Wagner to save the game for the Cavaliers. Franz got to go left. Got to use his left hand. He would have got the shot to the backboard at least.
Yeah, that
would. Or pass it to Paolo, who was wide open at the top.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Yeah. He's on the left side. Why go right hand? It was an incredible block by Mobley, as you said. He's been so good. I don't know the future of this Cleveland Cavaliers team, but seeing Evan Mobley move over to the five, it just makes sense to have four guys out and one guy in, and that's how they were awesome throughout those couple months. Now, Mobley is great. He can play wherever, but he was just so damn good defensively. And you said it, Garland's best game happened in this one, especially because he had a bigger role as well, because you take, you know, one of your stars off the floor and inserted Isaac Okoro for him. Max Strus had his best game, as you said, 16 points, four threes. And then old Marcus Morris, who I also had to look, make sure it's not Markieff.
Yeah.
But yeah, the buyout guy that they got because he fights, he scraps, and this was his real first big minutes of this series. And he was damn good. He had 12 points, two big threes in the fourth quarter, and he closed the game. And JB Bickerstaff said after the game, quote, "He's not afraid of shit." JB Bickerstaff, no problem. No problem dropping an expletive for a coach.
I agree. He's not afraid.
He's most definitely not afraid. People might be afraid of him. But Evan Mobley at the five, he was just damn good. And he was good offensively as well. As you said, the score, over 100 points for both teams.
Crazy, man.
And this was the best game of the series, just to watch it in the fourth quarter. Because both teams playing well offensively, to watch Banchero do what he does is just very, very fun. And we watched a close game down the stretch.
There was lead changes.
Yeah, that's cool.
It was exciting. I want another two games, and it feels like we'll probably get another two games because neither team has asserted themselves as the better team, and like, who knows what's going to happen when we go back to Orlando. Orlando played a lot better there. Cleveland played a lot better in Cleveland, so home court advantage might be big time in this one. But man, that Paolo game was so much fun to watch. 14 of 24 from the field, hit four threes, had four assists, did have five turnovers, but he only took two shots at the rim. Did get to the free throw line a little bit, had a huge dunk, but it was mostly mid-range jumpers for Paolo. Just patient, getting into his bag, hitting fadeaways. That was impressive.
Pretty spins from that man for sure. I don't know what's going to happen in game six as far as the Cavs go. Does Jared Allen come back? Is the rib okay? I got no idea. Does Marcus Morris play again? He's got to play for George Niang's minutes, I assume. And if we're going to get more small ball, like if Jared Allen can...
That's a good question, man, because, okay, a bruised rib, I'm sure it hurts, but he'll probably come back at least some point in this series, even if it happens to be for Game 7. He's been maybe their best player in this series up until not playing last night. But I don't want to go back to Allen and Mobley.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
So Mobley to the bench? That seems weird. He had an awesome game.
He made
the clutch play here. Allen to the bench? No, that guy had 20 rebounds in game one.
That's a good point.
Tough stuff for JB Bix.
Yeah, so Jared Allen, I will say last thing about him. We've always known he has the simplest wardrobe in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Very simple. He was on the bench with a standard, like a ringer t-shirt, a Nike ringer t-shirt. Yeah. Looked good. I mean, you look fine.
Yeah.
It's classic stuff. That's all I got to say about Jared Allen's wardrobe.
You don't see that often these days.
Yeah. Not Ringer the website, but just a just a standard Ringer tee. Any last things on that game?
I think I'm all noted up. We talked about Morris and Strus. These guys, the two-man game of Morris and Strus was big in the second half of the Cavs.
Strus. And I remember the Max Strus game from this season when he hit the game winner.
This was
by far his best game. Again, I think it's just because, like you said, the three-point line is there. Just let him rip it. All right, we will see that game six on Friday night. To some other good topics, we're going to do that via the up-down report.
Prepare your tubis. It's the up-down report.
We talked about Kristaps Porzingis' injury on Tuesday's show. He left game four of the series against the Miami Heat. He had a right calf injury. He's out at least for game five. Lots of talk that it could be for longer. Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that it's going to be for longer, for several games, as he put. At least several games is what he put, or no?
I think he said a minimum of several games.
A minimum of several games, right? Exactly. Yeah, that was the question. What is a minimum of several games, everybody was asking?
Well, if you watch Survivor, you know several is seven. So Jalinski, straight up Jalinski, was tweeting about NBA basketball. He's going to be out seven games. That's one playoff series. That seems reasonable to me.
Yes.
Obviously, Porzingis won't be playing against the Heat the rest of this series. We'll see if the Celtics are able to close it out in five. It's definitely possible. And then going into the next playoff series, they're playing against the Cavs or the Magic. I think they can still win that series without Porzingis because Al Horford can still play. He played 20 of 24 minutes, I think, in the Game 4 win for the Celtics. He's a good three-point shooter. He's a good defender. He's not the switch beater that Porzingis is. The concern with Horford is there's no way he can play the minutes load that Porzingis does. He ain't going to be able to go 40 minutes. Basketball, I don't think. So the worry then becomes the backup to the backup, which is always the question mark. Luke Kornet has played 9 minutes so far in this series. That's 9 more minutes than Xavier Tillman has played. Kornet's coming off his own injury. So that'll be the question mark. How much can they get from Horford? Do either of those guys show up? Kornet and Tillman. I mean, I guess they'll probably be going against, like, could be Evan Mobley, could be Jared Allen. Those guys are good rebounders, as is Mo Wagner off the bench for the Magic if it ends up being them. But I think the Celtics should be confident regardless of who they play in the second round. It'd be nice to take care of business against the Heat so they don't have to deal with winning on the road for Game 6. And then they just literally have to hope that Porzingis' injury doesn't linger into the conference finals.
I'm with you. I'm totally fine. I'm up on the Celtics playoffs chances because they probably close out the Miami Heat tonight. I will mention even Jaime Jaquez is out. He's their third leading scorer for the Miami Heat. I know the Miami Heat are going to fight here in Game 5 because that's what they do. But that injury is substantial because that Heat team just has a problem scoring. So no Terry Rozier, no Jimmy Butler, no Jaime Jaquez. While, yes, it is missed that Kristaps Porzingis won't be ripping from three-point land. Al Horford just can't do it like Kristaps Porzingis. But he can play a good amount out there. And you mentioned Xavier Tillman. Xavier Tillman Sr., it seems like he's an old man. He looks like an old man, especially with a senior on his name. But he's only 25. He's the guy who can... Yeah.
He's 25?
Yeah. Unless I screw that up every time I look.
That's amazing.
Because he just looks old.
He hasn't been around for that long.
No.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he's a 25-er. And last year in the playoffs, he was good against Anthony Davis.
Okay.
He guarded him fairly well. He had a 20-point game. He had a... Not to say that this guy's going to score a lot, but he can shoot the three a bit. And he had a game-winning shot for the Boston Celtics earlier this year after they got him. So they have enough. They are going to face a bigger team once they do... face whoever it is, Orlando and Cleveland, that's for sure. But they get even the rest of their guys are going to get rest if they do finish it tonight. Cleveland and Orlando are going to go into Sunday night no matter what, or Sunday, I should say, in a game 7 no matter what. So there's,
it seems like it.
That's some rest. Yeah. All right, moving on, next topic. Pelicans VP David Griffin met with media after their team got swept. He basically said, I think we've seen enough.
Yeah.
It's time to get better now, this offseason. So up or down on the Pelicans making big offseason moves after their VP, David Griffin, said, it's time to get better.
I mean, this is an easy up. Griffin's quote, whereas in the past we've always erred on the side of continuity and our takeaway has been, let's see this group healthy. I think we've seen it enough. Yeah, David Griffin said, I've been watching the last 3 years. We've ended up in the play-in tournament every single time, got out of it twice, and lost in the first round. Pelicans haven't won a playoff series since 2018, so it makes sense that they would be wanting to mix things up around Zion Williamson. And that, to me, means they got to start with the Brandon Ingram trade. This kind of read to me like David Griffin is saying, hey, we're open for business. Our season is over. You want Brandon Ingram? He's been an all-star before. He can score 20 a game for you if you're interested. Ingram is going to be a free agent after next season.
Yeah.
The Pelicans also have 2 first-round picks coming up in this 2024 draft. They've got the Lakers pick. They got the Bucks pick, neither of which is going to be all that juicy, but maybe a little bit enticing for acquiring other players. And the fit is funky alongside Zion Williamson with Brandon Ingram. Their starting lineup that they preferred this season, Ingram, Zion, CJ McCollum, Herb Jones, and Jonas Valanciunas, they had a negative net rating for the year. It's not a perfect fit. You need shooting around Zion. You need a little bit more rim protection than Valanciunas gives you. So it seems to me like Zion's locked in as a Pelican. Herb Jones is locked in as a Pelican. Trey Murphy is locked in as a Pelican. Question marks all around after that.
Right. And CJ McCollum more likely to stay with the team because he has a longer contract than Brandon Ingram. So more likely than Ingram, I would say, just because it's unlikely a team is going to get extremely excited about, you know, what he did in this postseason. He's obviously a talented guy. But this roster makes sense when they're all healthy. And they haven't been for most of it. And I would say, just listening to David Griffin and listening to others watching the series, let's say Zion's healthy. They win game one the way they were so close against OKC.
They could have.
And they probably win a game at home. I mean, it's very different if they're all healthy. So it does suck for them. It does suck for them that they're in the Western Conference. David Griffin mentioned that as well. You know, we won 49 games this season. And if we're in the East, we have a home court series. So it's totally different. I wonder if the league decides 1 through 16, we get rid of these 1 through 8s in the conferences, maybe change it up a little bit, because maybe you want depending on the teams, it all changes year to year as to who's the 15th seed.
How about geographically? New Orleans is pretty far east, you know?
Yeah, that's true. If there's any team.
States-wise.
New Orleans and Memphis, yeah.
Yeah, there's some ideas out there. Like, there are other teams who are going to be looking to make moves this offseason. Like, the Hawks have to be considered a trade candidate for Brandon Ingram. I don't know if it would be DeJounte Murray or Trae Young. You can make deals work either way.
Yeah.
Maybe you get a center that way as well, whether it be Okongwu or Capella, depending on what you're more interested in. Okongwu probably a little more enticing, I would have to imagine, for the Pelicans. I've seen some Warriors scuttlebutt for Brandon Ingram. Wiggins has the big salary going back, and then some young guys thrown in the mix for the Pelicans. I think Jared Allen could be a name they're interested in. If the Cavs decide to split up their big guys or even their guards, Garland would look nice next to Zion Williamson as well. Brook Lopez is a guy I think could be interesting for the Pelicans if the Bucks decide, or if the Bucks end up getting bounced here in the first round and decide to make some moves and get a little bit younger. Karl Anthony Towns, if things go poorly for the Timberwolves in the second round and they decide our tax bill is too big. There are some players out there that I think that the Pelicans should at least be interested in and explore trades for Brandon Ingram. Because if you're looking at Brandon Ingram from the outside, you can talk yourself into him helping teams, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially just 1 year left on his contract. Yeah, you mentioned a bunch of centers. They're definitely going to be looking at centers because you brought up Jonas Valanciunas. It just hasn't really worked out with him being their center. He is a free agent right here and right now. And I know he loves playing and play-in games, playing tournament games. So they do every single year.
They love it.
But a move there would make sense. They have Larry Nance at the center, but they would lack a little bit of size. So yeah, I'm sure they're looking elsewhere. Yeah, it just does stink for them. Zion plays the most games of his career. Then he's out for the playoffs. Brandon Ingram also out and comes back in the postseason. Doesn't look like himself because he's coming back from injury. They gave up a lot for CJ McCollum. And here we are. It's a roster that David Griffin built. And again, only really makes sense when they're all healthy. It would be different if they were all healthy. But
I don't even think it makes that much sense if they're all healthy. Having Zion and Valanciunas together, it doesn't really make that much sense.
Yeah.
That's the big question mark. They got to change their center position, and then I think they got to use Ingram as a notable player with a big contract to bring other pieces back.
They will be making moves, that is for sure, because they have seen the same thing over and over and over again. All right, next topic. Many people are talking about LeBron James' future. No surprise. And LeBron, because of all this talk, he responded himself. He said, hey, let me say what I gotta say. I've heard a lot of reports about my future. I said it last night, and I'll say it again. I do not know yet, as I'm only thinking about spending time with my family and friends. When I know after speaking with the fam, my counsel as well, and my representation about it, then you guys will know. Until then, shh. Emoji of a shh. And love the king emoji. All that on Twitter.
Love the king.
In two tweets. Thanks for putting them together there, JD. Because I was surprised to see them in two tweets. He's verified. He can.
That's a good point. He can go over the characters.
Yeah, but I guess, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how being the verification works on Twitter anymore.
Yeah.
If you get 280 characters.
It's almost as if he hit send before he, because it just cuts off in the middle of the sentence.
Yeah. That's what must have happened.
Yeah. Is that easy to do? I haven't tweeted in literally years. So.
Like type longer?
Like just not, well, no. Just accidentally send.
Oh.
Like you would a text. I feel like that's not possible. Anyways, whatever. It's weird. Whatever.
Unusual two-tweet move.
Yeah, maybe he heard that Brian Windhorst of ESPN said he thinks LeBron will not pick up the player option and become a free agent. So maybe he was responding directly to that. Anyways, everybody's talking about, is he going to pick up the player option? So up, down, Trey, on LeBron's future with the Lakers. I know we're jumping in.
We're jumping in.
We're jumping into this conversation.
I'm giving it a thumbs up. I think LeBron is going to continue to be a Laker because immediately after the loss to the Nuggets, it might have been when LeBron was walking off the court, The Athletic dropped a whole bunch of stories, and in one of them, the reporting said the Lakers are open to discussing any deal that would intrigue LeBron to return for his seventh season in LA, including the maximum three-year, $164 million extension they can offer. That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's another carrot to entice the king. The Lakers' willingness to draft James's son, Bronny, in June, which the franchise is open to. Mm-hmm. So they're like, we will do anything for LeBron to come back. And that seems to be the Lakers' way. We take care of superstars so that the next superstar wants to come here. We know that LeBron does want this big contract. It seems most likely that he's opting out of his $50 million deal for next year because somebody's going to sign into it anyways for longer. So I imagine it'll be with the Lakers. Like, you saw how buddy-buddy LeBron was with Jeannie Buss on International Women's Day? Sitting between her and whoever that other woman was, cracking him up with his jokes. You know, they seem to be on the same page, even if he's not necessarily on page with the current coach. Who knows who the coach will be starting next season, but I think LeBron will continue to be a Laker. But I've been wrong about LeBron's next destination 2 out of 3 times.
Right.
I was wrong when he went to Miami, wrong when he went back to Cleveland, and then the tea leaves were too strong for the Lakers. Everybody knows he's going to the Lakers.
Well, you make me think in 2010 when he decided to go to Miami, he had the TV show, obviously. Why doesn't he do that? Why doesn't he have a podcast with J.J. Redick to reveal it? I guess he doesn't want to do that. But what he does want is to see what the Lakers are doing with their future before he decides, I think, on terms of next year. Because I think this is the way LeBron plays his cards. He will force the Lakers to do something good by not declaring that he's coming back immediately. So I think that's smart. And it's June 29th that he has until to decide whether or not he's going to take that player option. It's all up to him whether or not he wants to take $51.4 million next year. It's totally up to him. And you made me think, he is friends with Jeannie Buss. Why doesn't he opt out of that and take a slightly better 3-year contract to help get some other guys there? It sounds dumb. But, maybe there's more money for other guys. LeBron is literally limitless in the dollars. So maybe.
Look, he doesn't need the money.
He doesn't need the money. So maybe he helps. Anyways, he's got 2 months to decide. Bronny is not guaranteed to be in this NBA draft. He could opt back in, or opt. It's not an opt. But go back to college for next year. He's working out and seeing what scouts and all that make of his future. So that's what's going on with Bronny James. I don't know if it really has anything to do with the Lakers situation.
I mean, but the Lakers don't pick until number 55 in this year's draft. That's a long time to be like, oh yeah, that guy's dropping to us. To be confident that a marginal draft prospect is actually going to fall to you at number 55. Mm-hmm. I think it's more just like signaling to LeBron, yeah, we got your back, man. We'll do whatever you want, including drafting your son, paying you all this money. It's nice to think maybe he could take a pay cut, but I don't think LeBron's taken a pay cut since his first contract with Miami. Right. I know he made a big stink about it back then. I think he was making like $16 million a year back then.
Yeah, those were wild numbers.
The numbers are totally tiny compared to these days. And I think back then he's like, yeah, I sacrificed for the team, but now I got to get my money.
Yeah, and
I'm the man.
And he could, let's say Bronny doesn't get drafted, he could just opt in for the Lakers and then figure out next year. Like, he doesn't have to sign a long-term deal right here, right now. But he does want moves from the front office to be good
for his future. Yeah, and I think that's why he is going to opt out, because that puts pressure on the Lakers to come through with whatever LeBron is asking for, whether it be the big-time contract, moving on from Darvin Ham, drafting his son, whatever it is. It's a little bit of leverage that LeBron has by opting out of the contract rather than saying, yeah, I'm here. That's kind of what he did the first time he signed with LA, right? He signed with the Lakers before Kawhi Leonard had made his decision, thinking perhaps that will entice Kawhi, and obviously it didn't. But this, to me, seems more of a classic LeBron, where, like, I'm going to keep signing these deals that give me an out so that I can put pressure on the front office.
Yeah, totally. And I think the thing that is different in this classic LeBron, who is always wanting his front office to make some big moves, he has complained about what's going on with the coaches, what's going on with Darvinham, what's going on with our team. And this one, he decided, I'm just going to be quiet. I'm just going to stay silent. He answered the question after game five about his future, and he said, I'm going to wait on that. And so, you know, being quiet means he is doing something behind the scenes. I wonder if he cares about D'Angelo Russell, you know, opting in on his player option, what's going on there, if they can get out of that. Because really, if D'Angelo opts back in, there's a lot of money devoted to many players on this team, including him, Anthony Davis, obviously, Rui, Reeves. Basically, what I'm saying is it could be the same team that comes back.
Could be.
TBD. Anyways, we have until June 29th to make that decision. That's 2 months for him to chill.
You think he'll chill and then right away to Team USA? I think their training camp starts earlier this year because the Olympics is in a little bit earlier. LeBron will be there. Mm-hmm. He probably will have signed a contract, as Brian Windhorst mentioned, on the Hoop Collective. It's rare for players to go play international competitions having their contract status hanging above their heads. Mm-hmm. But we've seen LeBron do some masterful things at Team USA get-togethers, you know? Who does he get in their ear? Hey, you want to request a trade? I know a good place.
I know a place.
I know a place. L.A.
Yeah, totally. Makes sense.
It's possible. It's possible. Was he recruiting?
I was just double-checking Greece's participation. He wants to play in the Olympics. Giannis Antetokounmpo. I'm looking forward to these Olympics. Okay. I want to know who's playing, where they're playing, if they're all playing. Giannis Antetokounmpo doesn't want to get injured before, obviously, the Olympics, because you get injured, you're done.
Yep.
So coming back in Game 6, I wonder if maybe he's primed himself. He's ready to go in everything that's happening. Anyway, that is 3 months away. Lots of months away.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruit and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Right now, though, we got Tweet of the Nighttime.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Okay, this one is about Nick's little guard, a little wing, a little firecrack, because he loves eating candies to energize him before games. No joke. The article in the New York Post, Stephen Bonnie got to the important information that everybody wants to know about Josh Hart. Josh Hart said, quote, I get about 300 to 400 milligrams of caffeine before the game. Mike and Ikes. And then I'm like, let's get ready to run around. Hilarious. Hilarious quote. He goes and eats Mike and Ikes candy. And then he tweeted himself, because Mike and Ikes got after him, he's holding a Mike and Ikes package with his face on it. Yep, they've given that to him. And he said, quote, "My dream has come true. Mike and Ike, big things coming." And I like this quote, this tweet, I should say, from his former coach at Nova, Jay Wright. Jay Wright tweeted, "I knew this day was coming. Josh Hart is the greatest Mike and Ike's rep of all time." Hilarious stuff.
"I knew this day was coming."
Yeah, what?
You must eat a lot of Mike and Ike's.
You must eat a lot. 300 to 400 milligrams of caffeine is like 3 or 4 cups of coffee.
Yeah.
So he just slams. How many packages of Mike and Ike's?
Well, there's no caffeine in Mike and Ike's.
Zero.
No. I was doing sugar. The research as well. I was going into the nutrition facts.
Oh, did you? Thank you.
Looking at nutrition facts for Mike and Ike, I was like, "There's caffeine in these?
Yeah.
I order these at the movie theater all the time, an S-tier movie theater candy, if you ask me."
Interesting.
Sour Patch Kids, Junior Mints, Snow Caps, Mike and Ike's, and Reese's Pieces.
Wow.
That's just one man's list. Just one man's ranking.
That S-tier is...
Maybe that's S and A, you know. I would actually probably just have Sour Patch Kids, number one, S-tier only.
Reese Pieces got to be up there.
Okay, yeah, acceptable.
But interesting stuff.
Nonetheless, the 300 to 400 milligrams of caffeine caught me by surprise, too, because I was like, is this guy the next Daryl Armstrong?
Right.
So then I had to do a little bit more research, because I was convinced that Daryl Armstrong drank 10 cups of coffee before every game. That's not true. He drank 1 cup of coffee before every game with 7 lumps of sugar, then he would eat 2 Hershey's Kisses at halftime. Hilarious. You don't think of Josh Hart as the same player as Daryl Armstrong, but if you're getting that caffeine power, that sugar power, you can do anything. Maybe it'll be a layup in a dunk contest, or maybe it'll be 17 free throws and no made shots. Either way, you get hyped up.
Well, maybe he thinks like Daryl Armstrong did, and he thinks that he's eating a bunch of caffeine. Because it sure sounds like when he tweets that 300, 400 crazy, milligrams man. Of caffeine, Mike and Ike's. I mean, it's one right after the other. So you got to figure... That's what he thinks he's eating in sugar. I guess he maybe thinks sugar is caffeine, whatever he's thinking. But that's a lot
or
of sugar.
Or both. Maybe he's coffee and then maybe. Eating Mike and Ike's, which that's an odd combo if that's the case. But it does explain to me why like he can play 53 minutes of a playoff game. The guy is just wired.
He is wired. And for those who don't know what Mike and Ike's is, because as a Canadian growing up, it wasn't a thing in Canada. Mike and Ike's just didn't make it. I was talking about it with Danielle yesterday. I don't even think I go to a movie theater and have had it. I just see them and I think, you know what? I don't want jelly beans. But they're not even jelly beans. They're like a hard candy, sort of like a jelly bean.
They're jelly bean adjacent, I would say. Yeah. They're like jelly bean capsules. That's the weird. They're like pill shaped.
They are pill shaped. They're long and hard. Yeah, they're like slightly bigger than longer than jelly beans. Am I wrong in saying they didn't exist in Canada, right, JD? Is that a thing?
I feel like Mike and Ike's were around, but not popular. Right. Hot tamales, definitely.
Oh, interesting.
Which was the same family, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
But Mike and Ike's, yeah. Well, I never had any.
Same family.
The fam.
I think you could get them, though.
And hot tamale.
Yeah, I think you could get them, too. But they didn't seem to be... on the S tier in Canada, anyway.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah. It's been good. It's been good getting to know about... I am like you. I felt a little weird looking up nutritional information. I just thought they automatically had the caffeine. I didn't look at the caffeine for Mike and X. I just thought, whoa, 300 to 400 milligrams. That's a lot of coffee. And then I looked that up.
Yeah.
It's three to four cups. No biggie.
Is he consuming the caffeine? Like, is he just taking a capsule of...
Like
he doesn't
pill?
Say.
He could, yeah.
He doesn't say. No, he doesn't technically
Intravenously,
say.
Maybe.
Fred Katz, if you're listening, ask Josh Hart how he gets 300 to 400 milligrams of caffeine.
Great.
I know they have gummies. Rachel sometimes has those. Like, caffeine gummies.
Oh, just in general.
Yeah, she'll take
it's
a couple.
It's not a Mike and Ike's product.
No. just absolutely not. She gets them on Amazon. She pops a couple before pickleball.
Oh.
It's a PED, as far as I'm concerned.
It is a little bit. How many milligrams of caffeine are you consuming before a standard No Dunks episode?
100, I'd say.
One cup of coffee?
One cup of coffee. Okay. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm 200 probably.
Yeah.
Course of a month, from 6:30 to 10.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's totally a lie. That's exactly what I did. I had 2 cups of coffee from 5:30. I got up pretty early today to 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's reasonable.
It's not quite a...
That's not bad at all.
Daryl
that's a
Armstrong
dad
rumor.
Amount of coffee.
It's a dad amount of coffee. Josh Hart has a lot of caffeine.
Yep.
It's from somewhere.
From somewhere. He did it somehow. We don't know yet, but we will.
We will. And tonight, we shall be not consuming caffeine, I doubt, but we will be watching basketball. tried to make that a transition. We will
That's pretty smooth.
We will be watching basketball. There's two games. Heat-Celtics could be over. Clippers-Mavericks will not be over. It's game five of a 2-2 series.
Pivotal.
Quite pivotal.
I don't know. I might need caffeine for that one, or at least a Hershey's Kiss or a full box of Mike and Ike's. These West Coast games, man. I want to be up and watching all of them because they've been very exciting. Nope. But getting a little tired.
Yeah.
Burning the candle at both ends, both Mike and Ike.
It's a 10 Eastern time. That is late. Yeah,
late guy. I'm not going to buy a box of Mike and Ike's today. You know what bugs me?
What?
Bring up that picture of Josh Hart holding the Mike and Ike's 3-point mix.
Hold on.
Because I saw this come around too. I was like, oh, that's cool. They call it a 3-point mix. There should only be 3 flavors in there.
Oh, it says 3-point mix on
there. Yeah, it says Josh Hart 3-point mix. They should only put in like a green, red, and orange.
Right.
Or a green, yellow, and red. They shouldn't put in the full collection.
So we got 5 in there, right?
Yeah, that's a 5-point mix.
Come on.
Ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. And there's a little arrow towards the red one that says actual size. Like it shows you how big they are.
Good.
Right. I didn't realize this is... I guess you got a box
that box.
Says Josh Hart 3-point mix with 5 colors. They taste different.
Controversial.
They taste different, I guess.
Theoretically, you know. Theoretically, they do. I think the same thing with like Skittles. Do they really taste different?
Right.
I don't know. Probably. Or do they just smell different in your nose, so you think it tastes different? These candy scientists are next level.
They are awesome. They're good at what they do.
They're good at what they do.
Okay, Heat Celtics, Clippers, Mavericks tonight. We will be back tomorrow to talk about those and anything crazy, like a player being sponsored by Mike and Ike, but other stuff. But for now, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, there's probably no caffeine in Mike and Ike's, but they will help you stay awake.
No doubt. I'm eating some Mike and Ike's tonight.
Let's get them.
Embrace the games, people.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.